Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. Wake up, Hollywood. Wake them up.
I just wanted to start it earlier.
Wake up with not even a joke. Just do random rim shots.
I just like to do a random sound effect just to start things off. Because I want you a little uneasy. I want you a little anxious. Like, what's he gonna?
A random sound effect would be like a car horn or like that. Yeah, that's a random sound. But a rim shot is a specific sound effect.
But we were doing so many rim shots last show, I was like, I still had some juice left.
Reserved for the end of a joke. Or what you would perceive as a joke.
How was your week? It looks like you got a haircut. This is a big thing. Did you get a haircut?
Yeah, I'm looking in the
You window. Totally got a haircut.
I didn't get a haircut.
You did.
No, I haven't.
Really?
You just grow it? It's growing backwards.
It's growing backwards?
No, I haven't gotten a haircut.
It looks very,
I put product in it.
It doesn't, well.
I usually don't have product in it. That's
so
probably
you spruced
it.
Up.
I did.
Well, it looks very groomed. It looks very thanks. Groomed. You look very nice.
Thank you.
You look very ready to rock this shit tonight.
I'm going to. I won't repay the compliment, but thank you.
Oh, dude, why? I actually did get a
because
haircut.
Because it's like you're fishing for it now.
No. I don't care.
You get a haircut?
I actually, you know
Because your
what?
Hair literally always looks the same.
Do you know why? Because I don't know what it is. I get uncomfortable as soon as my hair starts to grow. I just always want it short, so I never have to fuck with it.
Do you
it.
Cut your own hair? Because it looks like you just put a number 4 on and just...
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's it. Number 4 all the way around.
All the way around.
You called my shit, dude. What are you, a stylist?
Yeah, that's what stylists do. They put on the number 4 and go all the way around. That's what a hairstylist does.
You just called that out, dude. What did you work for Supercuts?
My dad was a barber.
Yeah. He knows his ways around.
He knows his way around the
trim. Around the trim.
See, now rim shot. Perfect. That would have been perfect for rim shot.
How was your week, dude?
It's good. Nothing really.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything. Nothing exciting.
Did you sleep in over the weekend?
No, I have a child. There's no sleeping in.
Did you cook him breakfast?
A bagel with cream cheese.
Okay, that's not cooking.
No. He doesn't want a big elaborate breakfast, which I'm... We went to Legoland.
Again?
Well, you have
this
your
kid... This
you have
kid
your
loves,
pass, you have to use
yes,
it.
That's true. And but isn't it in San Diego? You drive all the way there every weekend?
Yeah, but it's what else are you going to do on a Saturday with a five-year-old?
That's true. You're like, dude, just go
well,
play
we went
with
for Halloween, house. And this time we went for all the holiday decorations.
Do they change, like, all the... Like,
not as much as you... I mean, there's one little part. It's not like Disneyland, where they just go balls out with Christmas decorations. This was just like... It's all normal Legoland except for like one little section they call like Winter Holiday Park.
And he's probably like, Dad, oh my God, look at this. And you're like, that's cool.
Yeah. And they had like real snow in one area.
Well, let me ask you a more important question. Did you see the Star Wars trailer?
Yeah, we talked about this.
Dude, I didn't see it last week.
I know. I yelled at you for it.
I know. And I finally saw it. So that's
why did you ask me if I saw it?
Because I forgot that you saw it. Brain fart, dude. Seriously.
Awful.
Dude, did you by chance see the Grammy nominations?
No.
They're so bad.
I don't pay attention to
the
awards.
Dude, you know what sucks? Okay, here's the difference. Like, you're like in TV, film, like comedy.
I'm in it, yeah.
Well, but I mean, you're in that world.
I'm TV, film adjacent.
Well, but dude, you're in that world. You are in that world.
I'm in that world.
Like, my industry, dude, the awards for my industry, like the American Music Awards, the Grammys... They're such bullshit.
I haven't
dude.
Given a crap about music awards since Michael Jackson won like 18 of them that one night.
Yeah.
Like, that was the last time I cared about
every now and then there's like somebody that comes out and just like slays.
I can't stand. I know you're a musician and I respect what you guys do, but when you guys are award shows, I can't stand any of you. You guys dress like clowns.
Dude,
it's just
ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Hey, I don't dress like a clown.
Well,
Come on.
If you went to an award show, you would.
No, I'd probably wear
that's
a cool.
That's what
I'd
musicians do.
I'd probably wear a blue ruffled suit.
It's just insane.
No, it
like the entire like first three rows of the audience when it's just like all the musicians. They're just like,
and you're just like, what? Are you wearing a denim suit?
Yeah, it's like a costume ball. I'm like, just act like professionals.
No, that doesn't.
At least with like the Oscars or something, everyone's in a tuxedo or an elaborate. You know, it's like a nice gown. But like,
well, there's three records. Honestly, there are three records this year that I thought were phenomenal records. One was Coldplay Ghost Stories. One was Beck Morning Phase, and the third was Pharrell Williams Girl. Mm-hmm. Those three records were the shit. Those all got nominated, which is so awesome to see. But there's so much bullshit. Like, Iggy Azalea is up for Best New Artist. It's like, dude,
Music Awards
what
are stupid.
The hell is that? The
Music Awards have become like boxing titles.
Yes. Yeah, it's just total bullshit. But on a side note, you know, I said Beck Morning Phase, one of my favorite records, and we had Daryl Thorpe on here. He's up for three Grammys.
I saw his post on Facebook.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes the good guys...
Hopefully he wins one, and then we have him back on the show, and we can talk about his Grammy.
I've got two friends that actually have Grammy nominations, and they are actually up for really cool records. But everybody else, like, that I see the Grammy nominations, I'm just disappointed in my industry. I'm like, dude, this is not the best of what's out
there. It's not about the best.
I know. But see, at least in film, I feel like maybe because I'm outside of film, I'm like,
film's the same,
they got it right. But on some level, they got it right.
Well, no,
right?
Because before the Oscars used to be five films.
Yeah, now it's 10.
Now it's 10 or 12, just so you can put at the bottom Oscar-nominated film because it drives up box office sales and stuff.
So dumb,
it used to be the four or five films every year. Now it's like 15.
They should go back to
that. They nominate every film now.
Yeah, it's a little bit stupid.
It's
stupid. And like, you know what? I could see if it was seven, but 10. Some of them you're like, dude, really?
It should be five.
It should be five. I agree. I totally agree.
Like, I stopped caring about music award shows in the 80s, and the last time I cared about film award shows was like the 90s. Like, I don't, like,
the problem with me is like, I always have hope. I'm like, please get it right this year. Maybe though, and I'm a member, I vote. Like, and dude, the voting process, it takes you a while. It's not like, oh, I'm gonna just pick A, B. Like, you have to look through hundreds of people on the ballot. You have to go through categories. You have to mark them in, you know, like in some order that you think. First, second, third. You know what I mean?
I'd do it in 5 minutes.
Dude, you probably would, and you know what?
I wouldn't read any of it.
But you know what? It's frustrating when you're like, I'm going to take the time to do this, and then you see the nominations. You're like, my industry is a bunch of, you know, shenanigans, basically.
So it all is.
But I released my Christmas song today. I'm pretty excited about
that. I heard that. We heard it last week. Yes, the greatest gift of all time.
That's not it. Damn it. Seriously, Eddie. You're killing me.
The number one most impressive song ever made. Is that what it's called? What is it called?
It's called The Greatest Christmas Gift.
The Greatest Christmas
Gift. And it's because the message
Nikhil's
of the song.
Nikhil's greatest Christmas gift to the world.
You know what's funny? Like, the guy who did the little cover for the iTunes, he wrote, The Greatest Christmas Gift. And then he wrote a line. He wrote, Nikhil Kuroula. I was like, this is great.
What you wanted to happen.
I was like, well,
Nikhil is the greatest Christmas gift
that
you could wish for.
You know, it's enough out of you. Seriously. I paid a dollar for that one.
Paid a dollar for that?
No, I paid a dollar for all of them.
I did that for free.
I paid a dollar for that. It's the wetness at the end that's like, man, you don't need that. You could have cut that shit out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Terrible. What did you do this week?
What did I do this week? I took my family to see Fleetwood Mac. That was pretty dope.
Oh, yeah.
And then
Where?
At the Honda Center. But the coolest thing I did was on Friday night, and not many people know of a band called Tower of Power. They're like an old funk band from the
70s. Sounds like a tag team from the 80s.
It sounds like a wrestling team.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Tag team, that's what I meant.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not as into the
When you say tag you know. Team, it's assumed it's wrestling. Okay. What else would it be?
Well, that's a whole nother show.
Some freeze tag team from
Freeze Tag. That was a good game back in the day.
It was a game.
Anyways, I saw this band called Tower Power. When I was a music student, they were like, it was one of the most mind-blowingly great horn sections I've ever heard, and bands. And they've been touring for like 46 years. Not all the original members are still the members. One of the guys is the musical director for the Saturday Night Live band. They've all kind of done, you know, different session work. So there's a couple of their original members. They toured and they played on Friday, and I got to meet all of them and talk to them and tell them how influential they've been on me as a musician. And it was amazing, dude. They were so good, too. Like, you know, I saw the Grammy nominations that night and I was so bummed. And then that night I went and saw Tower of Power and I was like, you know what? Good music is still out there. Just people need to know.
It's just not recognized.
It's not recognized, yeah, though, unfortunately. But that's a whole other story. So, yeah, that was basically my weekend and full of other mischief. But, hey, looks like our special guest has arrived.
Hey.
Mr. Norm Maxwell.
Norm Maxwell, that's a great
painter
name.
Painter extravaganza. extraordinaire. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. It's good to see you guys.
Dude, you know what, Eddie? I'm so familiar with this cat's work, and man, he is... Seriously, you're one of the most creative cats I know that's out there.
Oh, stop.
And also one of the most colorful, man. He's got some seriously awesome, awesome paintings. He has actually done two of my album covers over the years.
Why hasn't he done three or four?
Maybe we'll come back. I gotta keep a little variety, dude.
You don't think he could?
I don't want to be predictable.
You don't think he could paint the greatest Christmas gift?
He could have. He probably could have.
Hey, what's going on, man?
So, you know, I saw his artwork actually probably, what was it, 4 years ago, and walked into his gallery and I asked him.
He told me this story before. I think we talked about this.
Yeah, I think so. I was like, dude, yes.
On one of our previous episodes.
Yeah, that's right. And I was like, man, your artwork is insane. And I was like having like some kind of
piece. That's what we were talking before about how great cover art was for albums. And it's like become like a lost, I think, a lost art form.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Because I was a huge Iron Maiden fan growing up as a kid.
What about the Asia covers?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Old
Roger
school.
Dean and so on.
Well,
Dude, those are great records, man. Dude, all that stuff. But you know what? People don't do that anymore. They just don't give a shit.
Like, I grew up like a metalhead. I grew up a fan of heavy metal, and like some of the best cover art of all time is heavy metal albums.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Because it's so detailed and so it tells such a story. And like, I think it's gone now. That's gone.
It's a shame because I think the art should be like a representation of what you're hearing.
Well, you should be able to listen to music and stare at the cover art.
Totally, dude. But you know, people don't do that anymore. They just look at like an MP3 and just look at it on their iPad or their iPod and whatever. But anyways. His work just totally blew my mind, and like, man, I was so happy that he could do the show tonight and be a guest. And man, one of the things I love about having friends of mine on the show is, you know, like we've talked, we've worked together, we've collaborated on so much stuff.
Definitely.
But like in doing an interview like this, I get to learn so much more about my friends that I didn't know.
Watch out.
So let's just jump into this shit.
Get into
it. So Norm, you are
Dig
great.
Would you still want to be my friend after this interview is the question.
Yeah, I'm going to like unfriend you on Facebook. I'm going to be like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. You can't, I don't know, just telling me some scary shit. So dude, you are an extremely talented painter.
Graphic artist, all the above. Thank you.
Tell me how you got into this world. Like, what was it that triggered it? How young were you, or how old were you?
Was it Crayola? Did that happen?
You must have been a badass on Crayolas, you know?
Is that the genesis of it?
Well, how I got into this world was my mother.
Well, of course. So she must have been like, all right, as you're coming out, give him a paintbrush.
She's like, I want you to be as poor as possible. Follow your dreams.
Yes, pretty much. No, my mom was the first influence. I used to copy her assignments.
Oh, really?
She
was a painter as well?
She was an artist. She was always creative.
Wow.
She went to art school briefly, and she had this portfolio that she made out of old curtains.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
And so I used to go and find that thing because she had to hide it from me.
Right, right.
And I'd take her assignments and pretty much and I would copy.
You hacked her. Good job.
So you're like, I'm going to steal that shit.
You're a hack. You hacked your mom.
Yeah. So that's how I got my original skills.
How old are you?
Oh, God. I don't even know, man. I've had a pencil in my hand as long as I can remember.
Must have been a tough birth.
Seriously, that's some extra baggage, right?
You don't
so,
have a lance sound effect, though?
Dude. I don't know. I have
slacking
to,
on the sound.
I am because it's like
which
I have to
I'm
learn.
Completely fine with.
Stop.
I'm on your website right now. I'm just going through all your.
Isn't his artwork just amazing?
Yeah, amazing.
Let's real quick. Let's start with the website because people should know about
normmaxwell.com.
normmaxwell.com. Yeah.
That's the one.
And so let me ask you about your creative process. So how do you, like, your work is, like, super colorful. It's super, like, kind of abstract in some ways.
Yes.
Sometimes it's political, which I love.
Yes.
And you kind of incorporate it with, like, a modern twist. You kind of, you incorporate a lot of styles and techniques.
Yes.
Tell me how you go through this process, because it fascinates me.
It's really sort of a freestyle. It's almost like jazz improvisation. I just start. From nothing. Music is usually driving whatever I'm doing. And I just kind of feel my way through it. So it's I like to think of it as sort of a spiritual journey, you know, right. No matter what the subject matter is.
Oh, there's a topless woman on this one.
Easy, Eddie.
I see where you're starting. What was your inspiration for the naked woman?
Start at the beginning. Which one is that? Which
it's under symbolism.
Let me have a look at that. That's...
He's...
Right there, boom.
Dude. Oh, he's like, let me see them boobies.
That's my wife.
That's too. Oh, really? Well, now I feel like a dirtball staring at.
Seriously,
it won't get off the page now. Stop. I'm trying to close out of there.
Honey, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Wow. Do you know you have naked pictures?
And he feels a little uncomfortable right now.
Well, yeah. Now that I know what his wife looks like naked through his eyes. Through his artistic eyes, I know what his wife looks like naked.
Oh my god!
She's got some thighs. Wow!
She's gonna leave me now.
That's some athletic thighs.
She's like, seriously, this is what you were talking about? All right, so let's talk about like what inspired that particular pain. Like she was like, you know, probably the love of your life.
She didn't lock
like...
the door. I walked in.
I'll tell you honestly, that piece was painted. What was it? A couple years ago, there was. A couple of eclipses that were happening right after each other.
Right.
And so that piece is actually kind of a spiritual piece because it's called The Transit of Venus.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I painted it. She wasn't standing there. I did it all from my head.
Wow.
Memory.
And, yeah.
Sense memory.
That's got to get you.
Total recall. I just kind of was painting what was happening in the universe at that time.
Right.
That's what came out. So
it's crazy. So do you think you, like, do you visualize the finished product? For, like, do you see something that you're like, I'm going to paint this and start here and just go
apeshit? No. Actually, I don't know where I'm going. It's like feeling my way through the dark, to tell you the truth. And the end result is always a mystery to me until we get there.
Okay, so let me ask you this. How do you know it's done?
I usually have to stop myself.
Really?
Yeah, because most of the pieces, there's just so much detail, and I'm a storyteller, I want to tell you the whole thing, and it could go on forever, literally.
I mean, that's one of the things I know. It's just looking. I mean, I've only been looking. I've been trying not to look at your wife, but all the other ones I've noticed. There's so much detail. There's like so much detail in everything. Like there's like no.
Yeah, Eddie.
It's just crazy.
Hey, get past the naked picture.
It won't close off of it. I
there's
can't
others. There's others.
Yeah, there's more
is
than
there,
one.
Is there? Is there really?
I think so.
No, but I'm just saying, like these are all so intricate. Like, there's so much to each one of these. You could literally stare at them for hours and hours.
And you know, the funny thing is they change over time. Some of the pieces, I mean, I've got a piece on my wall from...
Yeah, you do.
from 1989. And I swear, that thing changes every time I look at it, to this day. So they're almost like watching a movie.
That's amazing.
You know, they're constantly...
Well, that's what I noticed. When I walked into your gallery at the time, I walked in and I was just like... Holy shit, this is like one of the most beautiful and colorful rooms I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And like, I remember I walked up to you, I think the first thing I said was like, dude, did you do this? And you were like, yeah, man. And you were like so like nonchalant, like, yeah, man, that's a memory, yeah, I did that, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And I was just like, holy shit, man, there's so much to look at. And I think that's one of the coolest things about your artwork. Some of the paintings you've even sold... I've gone back to your website because they weren't, you know, anywhere where I could see them.
Right.
And I'd go back to your website and be like, I would just get lost in them, stare at them. Like Ed, look, I look at Eddie right now. He's
paying
attention.
Much. Yeah. There's so much to look at.
Dude, and it's crazy cool. Like,
well,
the detail,
like, you go through,
you know?
Each different page, each different, I don't know, you have, if anyone goes on the website, the collections are labeled different. Like, there's like Channel 7, Rising Soul Conquest, like each thing. Each little group you have is so different from the others.
Yes.
Like stylistically, like you don't see like a common.
Yes.
You're almost like a different artist for each section.
And it's almost like that. You know, it depends on what's going on at the time, what's happening in my life.
Right.
I'm almost like a mirror. I look at myself as like a mirror reflecting whatever's happening. And sometimes it's personal, sometimes it's social. Sometimes it's nostalgic, But the styles, there's just so many that I have that I really don't have one particular style. And whatever it is just rises to the call.
Yeah, that's what I notice. Like, I know, like, I draw and paint, so I'm not, not to the level you do, but I do. But you could tell, I can tell that it's my, like, I can see the similarities in the styles that I do with everything I do, even if it's a different, even if it's a different topic or whatever I'm doing. But like yours, like there's, it's so different from piece to piece. Like it literally could be a different artist doing each piece.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is. Maybe.
Well, so how do you do it?
Like, just depends on who you're hacking, I guess.
For the direction, you just kind of like, it's kind of, you just shift in a different gear altogether. Is it kind of like you want to walk away from this style after you do, maybe it's because like you conquer that mountain and you want to like face something else? Or is it just kind of like, this is where the piece is going, you let the kind of piece draw itself or paint itself?
You know, I let the pieces paint themselves, and I always tell my kids I hate to repeat myself.
That's good.
But really, I guess it comes down to that. I get bored really quick, and some of the pieces, some of the older pieces would take about 6 months, and I'm trying to figure out now, how did I stay with something that long, focused that long, because I can't do it the same way anymore. You
right.
know, just with so much.
And what do you do? Do you like, okay, so you wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. Is you have like a set schedule? Like, I'm going to paint from this hour to this hour. Do you kind of do like an hour here, 20 minutes here, 3 hours, 6 hours, just like wherever the inspiration hits?
Wherever it hits, man. Sometimes it's all over the place. You know, it depends. If I jump off of the canvas onto another project, it takes me a while to get back onto the canvas.
Wow.
And
I hope my album covers didn't do that. You're like, they did.
They did. They ruined my life.
You know,
I'm like, still recovering.
It's the curveball, the distraction. But yeah, so I basically will lose track for a while, and it takes me a minute to get back into the rhythm of whatever the piece is. And so I just follow it, man. You know, some days I want to paint and I just can't get it together.
Right.
So I have to find something else to do.
So do you ever paint over pieces completely? Or are you kind of are at the level where you know your technique's good enough that you can take it somewhere?
Actually just the opposite. I think I was much more sure in my younger days.
Really?
Yes. I would put something down, I'd never change it.
Hmm.
Now, and I think it has a lot to do with what I've done over the last few years.
Was that you think it's from ego being young and just like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Like, you know, like I got it. And then you grow older and wise and you're like, yeah, no one knows what the fuck they're doing.
No one knows, not even me. So,
almost become more critical too.
I think I'm overcritical these days. And I think maybe in the last 2 years, I've painted over a couple of pieces. And there's one canvas that I painted over 4 times.
Wow.
I just couldn't
really
get it together. Yeah.
Shit.
And I found myself in a rut and I just have to put that thing away and just start something.
So wait, you don't even take pictures of them or anything? Like, you don't remember them? Like, you don't capture them in any of the finished forms?
Well, they never get finished, so that's why they end up getting painted over.
Oh my god! And I think that's crazy. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, and another thing is, I'm discovering now that I hate every piece that I've ever worked on.
What? Oh, you must be an artist.
in the process, that. At some point, I just can't stand it because I don't know where to take it, how to finish this thing. And so, especially if it's something new, I just don't know how to go forward. And so, I'll want to paint over it. I'll resist it. This was the past. I've resisted. And so, it's like a waiting game.
And do you get, like, opinions of, like, friends or family or, like, patrons just walking by, like, or you just kind of like, fuck everybody. I don't want your opinions.
I really don't listen to other people.
That's good.
But the missus, she likes to chime in.
Of course.
Yeah. And I know that feeling.
And she's very conservative. I thought I was conservative. You know, you look at my work, you say, this guy thinks he's conservative, but she's very conservative. And she says, well, you can't do that. Well, you have to change that. Well, why is this that way?
And then you start going, yeah, why is it that way?
So, I have to really try to tune her out. but I, at the same time, I do.
We hope she's not listening.
She's probably listening.
If you are, there's a naked picture of you on a website. You should look into that.
But, I try to tune her out. But at the same time, I always consider what she says.
Right.
Because a woman's perspective in trying to sell anything
right.
is always the best. So I'm sort of at a catch 22.
Now, let me ask you an honest question. Mm-hmm. How do you choose the pieces that you sell versus the ones you keep?
The buyers choose them.
So you don't, there's no like piece where you're like,
so everything is for sale.
It's all for sale.
You're like, I will sell.
My soul is for sale.
Well, you know, there's actually a couple of pieces that I won't sell, and that's those I would say are my.
Because no one's offered you enough money for them.
That's what it comes.
That's why.
I'll tell you, there's a few pieces. There's a couple pieces, maybe two or three pieces that I let go of while I had the gallery, and I decided I wasn't going to sell them. And the right person came along and offered me what I was asking for. And I couldn't believe it. My right. wife says, well, what are you waiting for? Sell the paintings, you know. So I let them go. But it, right. some of them I'm really attached to. Like, they're like my children.
Right,
and
right.
And the funny thing is you know, if I don't see them for years and I get to see that piece, it's like visiting your long-lost
oh,
child.
Oh, man, that's cool.
It's getting the spin.
Like, you'll see it in somebody's house, maybe. Or
yeah.
That's going to be it's gonna be weird for being an artist like you, like, with what I do and with what Nikhil does, we create stuff and we share it with people. And that's right. what our art form is,
yes.
is sharing what we create with everybody.
Yes.
You create something and you can't give of it freely.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, people have to come and look at it. And then if they want it, they're basically taking a piece of you with
they're
them.
Taking it. Yeah.
And you feel them because yes. that's gone. It's yeah. being like what Nikhil and I do, especially with music or whatever. He puts it out in the world and people listen to it. And that's it. It's like, it's all
and
about.
I can always reference it, but.
You know,
when you give it, when you sell a painting,
yeah.
it's gone.
It's part of it's a physical part of you you've made.
Yes.
And you've given it away. Yeah. Like with music or comedy or whatever, it's just out there and you want to share
it's
it.
It's a moment.
It's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
It's a weird that one art form, that particular art form is different than the others because you do have to give a piece of yourself away yeah. to share it.
And you have to be in front of it to actually yeah. enjoy it. I think that's the beauty of music or comedy, you know, they're vocal, audio, so
yeah.
you don't have to stand in front of it, which is actually more influential than visual art.
Right.
You know? Music.
And what do you think about, like, the whole, I know the street art movement is mixed reviews amongst, like, real painters like yourself. Like, when I see a painter like yourself, and it's like, you're not, like, some bum that's, like, selling little pieces of shit on, like, a beach boardwalk to tourists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are a real painter. And that's one of the things,
so.
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to collaborate with you, because mm-hmm. you are a real artist to me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when you see somebody, you know, like the craze, like a movement in street art the way it is, mm-hmm. I always wonder, like, what's your perspective on that? And speak freely. That's what it's about.
Freely.
Yeah,
I'm going to speak freely.
Because I got my own opinions, too. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, you know, street art is an interesting and necessary movement. Initially, I didn't embrace it.
Right.
Because I felt that every Joe Blow was becoming an artist.
Of course.
And it was
yeah.
too easy to just cut out a stencil and to, you know, be an artist without being able to pick up a pencil. But I was, before the street art movement, I always firmly believed that everyone has a creative spark.
Right.
And street art just proved me right.
Right.
You know, so in considering that, you look at today and you have a flooded art market. Literally, it's flooded. You have a lot of artwork out there. You have a lot of artists, which brings down the price of art, you
right,
know, when you get
right,
into commodities and so on. So in a time like that, you know, I look at it as like the 80s, where at the end of the 80s, that kind of the markets fell out and a lot of things that people invested in lost their value, had no value at all. So I think that there's waves, and the cream is going to always rise
to the top,
and
right.
it's going to maintain its value. And a lot of this other stuff is going to fade away.
So street art is like the YouTube of
it's the whore.
Yes,
it's well, the whore on the street.
It's like with comedy. It's like with comedy, or you know, like even with music, like with free music. Or like, you know, the YouTube is like, it's put so much noise out there.
Yes.
That it's hard for people who are talented.
Yes.
I'm gonna snap that iPad. It's so fucking stupid.
No, but you're right. You're
it's
totally right.
It's put so much noise out there.
Yes.
That it's hard for good artists to be seen.
Yes.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we have a show like this and showcase people like him. Like, and you know what's cool? It's like we've never had a painter on the show. Mm-hmm. And you were one of the first people. I was like, I got to get him on the show because people need to know about your art. And like you live the life. Like there's a lot of painters. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I do this on the side. Right. But really, I'm a freelance, like, right. you know, tycoon yes. in this area, whatever it is. And you live the life. That's what, like, I'm fascinated with painters just because it's a part of art that I wish I had the gift for. And I don't. Uh-huh. I can barely draw a stick figure. Uh-huh. So when I see an artist that's living the life, that you live the life like the painters uh-huh. that I love, you know, the Dalis, the Picassos.
Yes.
And you live the life and you still create this unbelievably extraordinary art. It's fucking unbelievable, man. So, like, that was one of the things I wanted to bring you on just to showcase the light on what you're doing. But, dude, your artwork is unbelievable. One of the questions I wanted to ask is, who are your biggest influences as far as painters? Like, I know you, your style is so different than everybody else that I've seen.
Other than your mom. Yes. And your obvious wife. Who has influenced you in art?
Yes. Well, one of the first influences that had a major impact, other than, you know, I was a graffiti artist. I started writing graffiti.
Uh-oh.
Oh, punk.
Say what?
You punk.
Okay, so I started writing in 79 before it was called graffiti, before there was a whole hip-hop movement right, and all right. that stuff. And I picked that up from a brother who was older than me, who was writing from the mid-70s. And so that was the first influence as far as this taking the art to the streets and actually doing something with it.
So you were like one of the first street artists.
Well,
that's
yeah.
why you're like, bah, humbug, these schmucks. I was doing that in the 70s.
That was a way to get a fame, a reputation. After that, it would be a guy that no one else knows, another person no one knows, which his name would be, his name is Virgil Sova. He was my painting teacher, and he was a symbolist painter. Very cool, mellow guy, kind of a beatnik, I guess. And he was just a trip. I used to hang out with him and listen to him talk for hours and not say nothing.
Right.
Just try to figure out, how's this guy making a living
right.
off of this stuff? And his work was just amazing. I never saw anything like it.
What's the ballsiest thing you ever graffitied? Like seriously, like I've driven around, I've seen graffiti, I'm like, oh my god, someone fucking went out there with a scrape and did that? That is some balls.
Well, we've done stuff, let's say a piece I did.
Like, what's the thing you're most ashamed about painting on?
Oh god, the most ashamed of painting.
Like, is there a big statue of Jesus somewhere that's got a clown nose on it? Is there something you've done that you've like, oh, I can't believe I painted that?
No,
or on that.
I tried to be respectful. You know, I didn't tag on people's homes.
The respectful graffiti artist.
Yes, I was the good guy.
Sounds like a Saturday Night Live character.
You paint people's fences. Like, I'm just gonna do a mural. I'm out.
I painted the fence white. That's
cool.
That's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. No, it's graffiti. No, it's not.
I don't know if there was a piece that I was more embarrassed about, but there was a...
I'm not embarrassed because you obviously have pride in what you do, but like just saying, like I see people that go up and like somehow they position themselves on top of a huge billboard and they yeah. spray, they graffiti
like a freeway sign.
Like, I mean, like, how did you get up there
yeah.
and do that?
Well, there was a bridge in Philly that we painted under, the Walnut Street Bridge, and that was pretty daring. You had to climb up this ladder under the bridge, and then you had to walk out on the beams to actually get to the surface.
Wow.
So you had nothing under you but water on one side and traffic on the other. And that was...
It's like physically challenging, and yet you're still trying to create
that was scary
artwork.
So is that part of the rush then? It's like the adrenaline just to get
rush.
Out there?
Yeah, that was the rush. And then one time we went to that same location, and it was a hot spot, so it was undercover cops. And as we're walking down the tracks trying to get to the bridge, we see some shadow silhouette walking towards us. And I wasn't too sure of who it was. So we ran to the bridge, climb up the ladder as quick as we can, and we laid down on the catwalk. And as we're looking down, we see this cop come under the bridge with his walkie-talkie, and he's got his gun out, and he's looking around, and he can't figure out.
He's got his gun out?
And it was crazy.
Damn.
So we laid there for about 2 hours.
Get close. Dude, my heart would be beating through my chest, dude.
Don't find the sound effect of a beating heart.
Dude, sorry. wrong sound bite.
The guy cop had his gun out?
Yeah, man.
Damn.
Yeah, that was hardcore. But, I, you know, it was a dark place.
Yeah.
Spot of town, you know, so I probably would have done the same thing.
You kids today.
And the rattle of a spray paint can. Yeah, you're going to draw your gun.
And what color? Would you bring, like, different colors? Would you be like, I'm going to use a little blue with a little pastel?
Oh, man, we'd have an array of colors.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was my partner, a kid named Ari Foreman, Design 29. And we'd have our duffel bags, these army duffel bags. And we'd try to get up like 25 to 50 cans of paint. So we weren't like the hardcore writers where we were out stealing the paint from these hardware stores.
Right.
I'll tell you the truth. Our parents, my mom and I, we had a deal. She would buy me the spray paint. But if I got caught...
You gotta get yourself out.
I gotta get myself out.
That's dope, dude. Yeah. So she's like, "I'll get you into jail. You get yourself.
I'll get you arrested." But well, you don't know me.
Look, man, I got locked up one time. Both of us.
Really?
Yeah. And so Ari's dad, he came and got him out, and I waited all night.
Shit.
The guys that were there before me, they all got out. I was the last guy sitting there in the morning.
You tag the walls.
No, I was terrified.
What do they do to you when you get pinned for graffiti? You got to pay a fine or?
I had community service.
Community service.
I was about 16 then. And the cops, when they caught us, they found the cans that we had in our hands. But I had a hidden pocket. And this guy was pissed that he put me in the paddy wagon and didn't find that second can.
You graffitied the paddy wagon?
No, they pulled us out again.
That would have been ballsy.
That would have been ballsy.
They stopped to pick up some other guys.
Max was here.
And they pulled us out again and searched us. And the cop finds the can in my jacket. And he starts spraying it inside my jacket.
What?
He finds the Rambo knife in my sleeve. And he says, "Oh, what are you going to do with this, you John Rambo?"
Holy shit.
So he sprayed up my jacket, man. I was covered in spray paint. You know, smelled really nice all night.
Dude.
But,
that's some shit, dude. You're like, one day I'll show you I'm going to have a fucking gallery.
Hey, I chilled out, man. I chilled out for a while. I chilled out until I graduated from high school.
And then what you wanted to pursue it, right?
I got back into it.
That's awesome.
When I can be put away forever.
And now you're over
when
16,
I can be tried as an adult. Let me do this when the stakes are higher.
Who are some of the artists right now that are out that you think that are doing some shit that is either A, groundbreaking, or things that you just are like stylistically just intrigued by?
Well, I always love Doze Green's work. You know, Doze is someone that I've collaborated with over the years, and he's been sort of a sage and influence in my work, sort of in the background. A lot of people don't know about that, but
that's cool.
He's a person that I highly respect. Another person that I really like right now is Retina.
Never heard of either of those cats. No,
his work sort of looks like someone was doing tic tac toe, like on the side of the Santa Monica Library.
Okay,
I'm sorry, West Hollywood Library. His work is sort of like a play on merging different texts. So it looks sort of like
old, a language almost?
Yes, and it looks sort of like old Cholo graffiti.
That's cool.
New age Cholo graffiti, but from some other planet. And I really like what he's done with that. I watched him transform it over the years, and he's really getting the attention right now.
So when painters collaborate, like what you said, like how does that work where you're not like, I mean, how do you be objective over somebody else's work when you're working on it with them, you know what I mean?
Well, we didn't necessarily work. It's more of the ideas.
Right.
And less of physically working together on the same piece. It just seems that our minds are on the same path. Whether we see each other or not for years, it seems like at different points where we're touching on the same subjects and handling them in the same way. And I've always found that to be... very interesting, very, very empowering connection.
That's awesome, man. It's tough to see, like, how different painters would, I guess, influence each other? Because there's so many, like, you know, so many painters, like, back in the day, they would like, see each other's work, be like, no, you got to do this, you got to do this. You know, it's like, you don't see that now. It's more of like a, it's very independent. You know, that I think the art movement's very independent. Just not just in painting or visual arts, but also in music. Like, everything's kind of isolated, way more isolated. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool to see painters. I wouldn't even know that how that world would even exist. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how that you basically, the push and pull of inspiration versus, like, laying something down and having somebody else's opinion kind of influence the piece. Well, or does it?
I think that today, especially in the street art movement, you have a lot of, and traditionally with graffiti in general, it's sort of a mashup where people get together. It's like musicians jamming,
right?
And they get together and they kind of just do their thing, and they and that actually pushes the art
the form. Boundaries,
because you might see something in there and you work on that a little more the next time, and it starts to expand, you know. And the collaborating parties, they both sides take ownership, so it's not any one person's thing. And that's when you start to have these movements with the street art and any other movement. It's the collaborations that really transform it.
Now you've started doing some. You've done like graphic design as well for a lot of people, like. I know you're a hired gun for projects and companies for do you do logos and all that stuff as well? I think you've done some of that stuff.
I've done some logos, but mostly a lot of my commercial work was I was focused more on that from, let's say, 98 to about, I still do some of that work, but it was much stronger up to 2007 before I started the gallery, and that was art directing. And music videos and commercials. And so how I got into that was through rendering, through just drawing the sets in perspective, in proportion, and laying them out, doing a layman's architectural draft.
Right.
And knowing every aspect of it, I was able to communicate with the carpenters and the lighting people.
That's
and
amazing.
The painters. So it was... And that was working under other production designers. So I went from that, learning everything, every aspect of it, and ultimately becoming an art director.
You kind of like that order? Because it's a totally different bag. It's like one is just complete freedom and expression.
Yes.
And one's kind of like, keep it in this way, have an order, have a deadline, have a flow, know that you have this step has to get to this step. You know what I'm saying? Like, do you kind of like both sides of the brain
working that way? I do. What I really appreciated about production was the, it was almost like a military, you know,
right.
Everyone's like, yes, sir. You know, going 10-100, that means I'm going to go take a shit, you know, so you're using these number codes. But I just love the way that something could go from an idea to a sketch into this real thing, and it wasn't one person, whereas I'm on canvas, it's just me.
Right.
This army of people, and it wasn't any one person.
Right.
And the director was an artist, and the performer is an artist. So everyone is creative, you know, even the carpenter, everyone's got creative input into the end result. So I really did enjoy that.
That's slamming.
Yeah.
Do you ever go, I always wonder this about painters too, it's like, do you ever go to museums and just go, what the fuck is this? Why is this on a wall?
Yes, and for that reason,
I know people think that. Just, you know, but I'm wondering if painters do too.
I do go out on occasion, but I don't go to the museums and galleries as much as I used to. I try to. It's sort of a Wu-Tang perspective where they only really listen to their own work, so that they didn't sound like anyone else, and that's how they came up with the sound. And I'm sort of the same way. And the other side of that is when I go out to the museums and the galleries, you know, provided the work is good, I can get overwhelmed.
Right.
And it'll take me a while to come down from all of those different impressions.
You mean from the inspiration or from the, okay.
Just the inspiration.
Symbolism, all that stuff, the stories, basically.
Yeah. Just you get so many different perspectives, and as an artist, I'm a sponge. I suck up everything that I see and I make it my own in some way. So the challenge, I think, is to be influenced but not to, you know, plagiarize.
Right, right.
Not to do what you did to your poor mom.
Sorry, Mom. I owe it all to you. I really do.
She's like, bastard. Have you ever done any murals like for like schools or?
Yes.
Man, I think that's like what needs to happen.
That you is know? What needs to happen, and it's and it is happening. There's a lot of public projects that are going on, and I am getting my feet back into that. I just did. I actually have a project in process right now with Branded Arts. And it's over here in the valley at the in Burbank at the Disney Towers.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so we're doing a couple of big pieces over there for a new design space. It's all the furniture is being custom made.
That's super cool.
Selected the artist, so I was fortunate to be in
there. Dude, that's amazing. And when do you think it'll be finished?
Sometime in January.
Okay.
I've done a quarter of the work. And some panels are in production right now that we're going to work on. And so I have another three pieces that I'll do for that
project. What kind of, like, roadblocks do you hit in a situation like that? Like, you know, you're working on something big like that. Mm-hmm. There's got to be, I mean, to me, I just see roadblocks with music all the time. You know what I mean? So when you have a big project like that, like you have this big wall space or it's mm-hmm. a big part of a, you know, several panels like what you said. Mm-hmm. What are some of the roadblocks that you hit when you're creating something like that?
I need a bigger brush. There's not enough purple paint.
You know, that can be one of the issues, is having the right materials. Time is always an issue because I want to get paid.
Right.
So how fast can I get this thing done?
Are you ever, like, overly ambitious? Like, you're like, I can do this, and then you're like, nah, it's got to be simplified.
Definitely, I can be over-ambitious. And I'm older now.
Right.
So maybe a few years ago, I could have knocked that thing out in a day. Maybe now it might take me a week, you know?
Right.
So that is one of the biggest challenges is the physical aspect of it, you know? It really is the painting is very physical.
Yeah.
And
that's what people don't realize. Mm-hmm. So when they see like a piece, they may think, oh man, that's way too much. But it's like, dude, it's a physical labor.
I painted for a friend of the family one time. I painted a wall mural in one of the kid's bedrooms, like a street shop. So it looked like his inside of his house, his inside of his bedroom was like the front of a restaurant.
Right.
And I just overshot myself. I was like, I'm going to do this. And you can, so there's going to be perspective, like you're looking in a window and you can see the restaurant inside the window. And like, it took me like 3 weeks to do this thing. And I started having the worst pain in my wrist. I'm like, why is my wrist killing me? I'm like, because I'm standing there painting.
Yeah.
And you don't really, you get like tendonitis in your wrist. Like, you don't realize the physical toll.
And it's also the physical poses that you're in.
Yeah.
To do certain angles.
You just have no idea the physical toll it takes.
It's more that physical pose
than
anything. I was in Paris visiting a client, and he purchased his work from some old guy. He's a famous art forger. Hmm. I can't remember how to say his name, but
it's okay. He's French.
Yeah, he's like
Mr.
La la la.
Ooh la la.
But the guy was hunched over, man. He was hunched over, like literally, like a hunchback. Like his body was compacted. And before I left, a friend of the client comes over to me. And he says, "Do you work out very much?" I said, you know, I'm not as active as I used to be. He says, you should take on some type of a physical fitness regimen. I said, well, what do you mean? Why are you, this guy doesn't even know me. What do you come out of left field? Just come and tell me that. You just met me today. He says, you see that guy there? You don't want to end up like that. And I thought about it. He's right.
Wow.
Because if one of my habits is that I stand when I'm working. So
right.
That's a habit. But, you know, I spent maybe 10 years at a drafting table doing the art direction. And so if I'm – or at a computer.
You're naturally hunched over.
Yeah. And so I'm always conscious now when I'm working. when my back is hunched up, you know. So, and then my the knees.
It's amazing.
The back in general. So it's
That's what I'm saying. Like, you really live the art. That's what's so fascinating about it.
Living, breathing. For all it's worth.
No, and do you ever do watercolors? Because I've seen a lot of your oils. I know you mostly do oils.
Yes.
Or are you just kind of like, fuck that. Well, I'd rather do oils.
Actually, I've been working in oils since 2011.
Okay.
Prior to that, it was acrylics, which is technically watercolors.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so water. It's,
I didn't know this.
It's a water-based paint. And the reason I use the acrylics is because it was non-toxic. There's no smell. It dries quickly. I had one client that wanted everything painted in oils they would pay for. I start painting in oils, and it was the learning curve that I always tried to avoid.
Right.
It wasn't the mixing the colors, it was the drying time. So the thing that I had to be conscious of was not to work on something too quickly and turn it into mud.
Right.
And so oils is an exercise in patience.
Because it takes longer to dry, right?
Yeah. But when I started using oils, I just became a stickler for it because the colors were vibrant. You know, the paint is going to last at least 500 years or longer.
Right.
So I still prefer the oils. It's just the toxicity of it.
Right, right.
And the time. I need immediate gratification. So I've gone back to dabbling with the acrylics. For some works, and I just have to take a piece that I know that I'm going to spend a lot of time with, and that's in oils.
And when you're doing like graphics, like on a computer, are you kind
you
of
you don't
like,
use oil or acrylics?
No, you probably like
that wouldn't be very productive.
It's so easy.
I've ruined my computer again.
I can't see on it.
Gotta stop painting on my computer.
It's less toxic.
Oh, you're probably just like, oh, this is, I can edit this so much easier. In some ways, that's good. In some ways, I feel like you may overthink things with that medium, you know?
Well, the downside to the computer is that I think that I can undo everything. So, you know, on the Mac, it's Command Z.
Right.
So I'm thinking while I'm painting, Command Z. Like, I could just undo what I just did. The last five moves, I could just undo that, go back in my history. But it doesn't work that way. Right. So, you know.
It's much like a painting.
Yeah.
I got to give you a compliment. I just finished producing this new artist who's going to be on the show in a couple months. And he walked into my living room. Mm-hmm. This was like 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. And he saw the Live Vibes cover that was all blown up. That you know, you blew it up, actually. And he was like, dude, I love that piece, man. And I was like, dude, that's my album cover. Like it's so funny that you're on the show because I was like, I have to text Norm this. And now I get to tell you in person. But he was man, that cover is so amazing. It's so beautiful. It's so colorful. And I'm like, Norm is such a badass. Like, I just sat there. I look at it every day. I mean, I really do. And I don't know if I ever told you, my dad took the originals that he gave me, and he made these cool frames and put it in my parents' house back home. And, man, your work is just extraordinary. One more time, where can everybody find you, and what do you have coming up next, or where can people buy prints of your stuff or original? Tell them everything.
Check me at www.normmaxwell.com.
Spell it out, too. Just give them all.
www.normmaxwell.
I like
dot
it.
com.
They got the .com. Come on. And what do you have next? Like, slash. Where can people like see your work next? You said the gallery.
You gotta find me, man. You know, I close my.
I'm not gonna make it easy.
Yeah, you gotta find me. You know,
you find me.
Find me on the web and make an appointment. My biggest thing is I have not been able to get enough work together to actually have a gallery exhibition as a one-man show.
Right.
It's been my dilemma for the last...
Because you keep painting over all your shit.
That's right, man. I've got this
Stop painting over your shit.
I've been working on for the last 5 years, and it's taken on 50 different incarnations.
Well, people can see the January release of the what was the... And then you said by the Disney buildings.
Yes, that I'll post that up on Instagram. I don't know if that'll be open to the public because the building is still under development. But I will keep you posted on that.
And check out the naked picture of his wife.
And the next place you can check
on NoraMaxwell.com.
It's a little down the road. It's a big project that I'm doing with Dwell on Design, the folks at Dwell Magazine. We're putting together a live mural that I'm going to paint during the Dwell convention downtown.
That's dope.
Yeah, that's. I think it's in March or May, one of the M months.
Dude, I love it, man. Dude, you're making it happen, man. That's what this is all about. Well, cool. Dude, I hope our listeners check you out.
Yes,
Norm Maxwell.
Norm Maxwell.
Thank you for being a guest on our radio
show,
man. This was a fascinating hour for me, man.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in.
Of course.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.